Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Every morning at 8 a.m., we take the best question you have for Mark Schlereth using hashtag question mark on social media and the text line. And now it's time for Question Mark.
All right, we'll do a special edition of Question Troy today, as Troy Rank filling in for Mark Schlereth. Feel better, Stink. Feel better, big guy. Cecil Amy filling in for Mike Evans. And we're taking your questions on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Use the hashtag question mark. Hell, use question Troy. Whatever. We'll get to it, and we'll get to your questions. Again, RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. This one comes in from Diego. You guys are crazy. Why in the world would the Broncos pass on Dwayne Haskins at 10?
Well, Diego, it's simple because they got Joe Flacco, and their posture this offseason has been to win. And if you take a guy at 10, which I actually put up on the DenverChannel.com last week, the case for taking a quarterback at 10. But to say it's crazy they would pass, it's not crazy based on their offseason, Cecil. They're trying to win now. And when you win now, if you take a guy at 10 that doesn't play this year, how does that make you better this season? It doesn't. Diego, that's the simple answer. Now, you have an argument, I'm assuming, Diego, on why it makes sense, which we framed earlier in the show, Cecil, is that if you go 8-8 under Flacco, you're dating, you're not married, there's no guaranteed money moving forward, and now you got this kid sitting there who redshirted, and now you can sell hope. We're getting better, we got a new coach, and now we got this young kid in year two who's ready. That would be the reason for taking him, and a fifth-year option. But again, their posture following the tea leaves doesn't suggest they would take a player at 10 who's not going to play this season.
Dwayne Haskins and the fall. As we get closer to the draft, it seems like mock drafts have him falling. They have Drew Lock falling as well. I think was it Kuipers or Daniel Jeremiah? Somebody who's really good had like Drew Lock at 30 to the Packers. I was like, well, I'm not crazy about Drew Lock. I don't think he falls at 30. But anyway, with Haskins, why the fall? I've reached out to some people, Troy, that I trust, and there is, you know, the whiteboard is always brought up, and also the fact that when he went to Ohio State, he couldn't beat out JT Barrett, and that when you're the man, when you're that guy, you're Trevor Lawrence. You show up at Clemson, and you go, hey, Kelly Bryant, pack your bags, kid, because I'm the man, and you didn't see that with Haskins. Is that any concern to you that Haskins wasn't the man? Because I've heard you talk a lot about Haskins glowingly, and about how, you know, that would give them pause. Does it give you pause then when you think about Haskins go, huh, you know, I like his deep touch. He doesn't do well on second read throws. And, you know, he wasn't really the man right away. Is that anything to look at or be concerned with?
Yeah, I think bringing up Trevor Lawrence in any conversation, he's an aberration.
I mean, Andrew Luck.
he's your Bryce Harper. He's your Zion Williamson of college football right now. I mean, if he came out this year, he'd be the number one pick.
Yeah.
We all kind of agree, right? Mm-hmm. So I put him aside in a different category. The case of Haskins, the way you're saying it, is like, how could he not beat out JT Barrett, who's essentially poor throwing, running quarterback? JT Barrett was basically a coach on the Ohio State staff from everyone I've talked to. I mean, his leadership skills were just like, my God, this guy's like 40 years old. He's 18 going on 40. And college coaches are about structure and trust and reliability. Clemson, that's why I love the fact they're like, I mean, Lawrence is amazing, but it was like, hey, whoever's better is playing. Most college coaches aren't that way. It's who they trust most. JT Barrett was one of the most trustworthy players in college football for a few years. All he did was win games, and he was a leader. I mean, the clear leader of the team. So I'm not concerned that Haskins didn't beat him out in that way, because you're not only going up against him, you're going against kind of this his aura, his legend of being a leader. What concerns me about Haskins, he started 1 year in college football. And the guys who've succeeded in the NFL who started 1 year of college football, it's a short list, right?
I mean, Very short.
You could go to Mark Sanchez, who, you know, and I talked to Mark still to this day. He could have probably used another year of college football. Trubisky, right? Wasn't he a one-year starter?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Doesn't mean they're
Ryan
not.
Ryan Tannehill.
Tannehill. So that would be my concern with Haskins. But if you're going to bring him in and redshirt him, got an argument. You have some of the concerns that I don't, in terms of him not beating out Barrett. That's not a concern for me. My one concern with him is he would, for me, would need a redshirt year. A clear Patrick Mahomes redshirt year.
But Joe Flacco would be what he said he would be, the understood quarterback. thought that was interesting he said that. I'll be the understood quarterback.
Yeah, Joe Flacco is great. Like, should they take a quarterback? The question was, what would you feel like if they would take a quarterback? Mm-hmm. And he clearly was partial to a 6'6 guy with movie star hair, good looks, that's already on the roster.
Right.
He's just like, I don't know how that makes us better because I'm the quarterback. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm kind of a big deal. Yeah. I love the way he said that. It was such a low-key stab of, why would we take a quarterback when I'm here? And he didn't say it that way, so be careful. But if you were there, like if you saw a transcript, it doesn't really read that way. Mm-hmm. But when I was literally standing right in front of him, and it was kind of like, why would we take a quarterback?
And look at his body language. Go back and watch the video, because I was standing right next to you, and like his body language is like,
It was so low-key like.
Yeah.
I just lived this with Lamar Jackson.
Right.
No, we do not need a quarterback.
It's Question Troy. Ramoslaw.com text line is 303-713-1043. Use the hashtag question mark or question Troy. Either way, we'll get to you. Again, Ramoslaw.com text line 303-713-1043. This one comes in from Leonard. He says, enough with the Broncos. I want to know if the Nuggets are done or not. Okay, Leonard, are the Nuggets done? Now losing again to San Antonio and down 2-1 in this series.
Well, we had Earl. Thank you for the question, Leonard. We had Earl Boykins on at 6:45 this morning. And, you know, he honestly painted a bit of a dim picture. And he brought up a great point. This group of Nuggets players has never won in San Antonio. They have a 14-game losing streak in San Antonio, Cecil. They haven't won in San Antonio since
2000. That means they're due.
It's one way of looking at it. They haven't won there since 2012. They should be better than the Spurs. The Spurs have learned. Spurs are playing playoff basketball. Slow the tempo down, dictate, make you uncomfortable, make you have a sense of urgency you shouldn't have. Nuggets are firing up shots. The first game, like, oh, we got to shoot. Hair on fire. And Spurs are running their offense. Spurs, if you want, they're playing playoff basketball. And as Earl Boykins told us, Derek White's doing something like you don't see in the NBA anymore where everyone shoots threes. He's like, I'm shooting 70% because I just get the ball and take it to the rack. Right-handed. Like, it's not. He's not doing anything. We didn't see it either UCCS when he was a Mountain Lion or in Boulder with CU. He's getting the ball face up and going to the rack, and Jamal Murray's not providing any resistance. So are they done? No, but you can see it from here because I don't know how they're going to win at San Antonio playing the way they are right now. Murray's inconsistent. Barton needs to come off the bench, and they have got to find a way to defensively have a group effort where you feel like, well, hey, you got to solve White. Well, that's Harris on him. Beasley, whatever you do, you got to take Murray off White, mainly to just clear his head so he can score again. But are they done? You can see it from here. And I honestly, I'm going to tell you this. It's a disappointment to me if they lose. They say, oh, it's Popovich, it's the Spurs. I don't see Tim Duncan on that team. I don't see Tony Parker on that team. I don't see Manu Ginobili on that team. It's an upset as a 2 seed. And honestly, they could be down 3-0 if not for Murray's 21-point fourth quarter in game 2. That's embarrassing. They need to come out and make a stand. And maybe they end up losing the series, but you got to find a way to show resolve. Like, grow up fast now. Now you're in game 4. Like, enough. You know how the Spurs are playing you. You know how they're slowing the game down. You know how Derek White is suddenly first-team All-Pro here. Figure it out, Nuggets. Maybe you lose the series, but you got to show up better than this because they are a better team than what they're showing right now.
Is this just truly who they are? I mean, the second seed is awesome, and, you know, certainly he's got Nuggets fans excited. That's great. Regular season doesn't mean anything. And we all knew the Nuggets would make the playoffs this year, although we thought, okay, you probably get like a 5 seed, right? Maybe 4, whatever. But 2 seed. Has that created unrealistic expectations? Like, they're going to meet Golden State, they'll lose to Golden State, but they're going to get to the Western Conference Finals. They might not even get out of the first round.
Well, the unrealistic expectations, when you take kind of the 10,000 feet, you know, you look from above, is they have a bunch of one-way players. And the playoffs, the game changes a little bit to where you've got to be able to run structured plays, both in your offense, out of timeouts. The game changes in the playoffs. It's called differently. You know, it's called a little differently. Stars get calls, whether they say it or not. It's called a little differently. And the Spurs are putting out a clinic on how do you play playoff basketball. Slow it down, make you uncomfortable, impose their will. And that's the part about the Nuggets that they're struggling with, Cecil, is what is it? Unrealistic expectations? No, they were a two. But I say the same thing about baseball teams. Like, some teams are built for the regular season in baseball where they can win 92 games and they get to the playoffs. And once you get to their 2 and 3 starter, you're like, eesh, I don't like that matchup. And that's why you talk about teams in the baseball that are built for the postseason. When you're rolling out Verlander and Gerrit Cole and they had Keuchel, you're like, well, they can match up with anybody. On the Rockies, it goes Freeland, Marquez, and then what? Two men and three maybes? So that's what I'm saying. Like, the Nuggets in some ways are a really good regular season team, but until they figure out, A, who is their every night score, who's that's going to be? Because they really don't know that from night to night. Or if you, in absence of that, you got to play better defense consistently. And Malone has challenged them. He told them for a month, the playoffs are different, the playoffs are different, the playoffs are different. Now here they are down 2-1, having to win a game in San Antonio. And he's pissed, calling them out. He's tried to push that button multiple times over the last month, knowing they're not shooting well. They've been in a shooting slump for the better part of 2-3 weeks. What's the best way to solve a shooting slump? Play better defense. The Rockies weren't hitting. What's the best way to get out of it? Don't give up any runs, Herman Marquez. So Gary Harris is their best two-way player. Follow his lead. Watch him compete. Because he's the guy, like, that's how you play playoff basketball the way he's playing. Barton and Murray right now, when they're not scoring, they're negatives on the floor. It's just that's the stats of it. So they're not done yet, but you can see it from here.
It's Question Troy or RamosLaw.com text line. You got a question for Troy. Fire it away. Hashtag Question Troy. 303-713-1043. This one from Vanya saying, are the Rockies back now on a 4-game winning streak?
I'm not going to say back because I got to see it for more than 4 days, right? But the easiest way to get back in baseball is pitch and play defense. Because hitting is a roller coaster. For even the best hitting team, Cecil, you could have 2 great weeks of hitting, and then you have like a 4 or 5 game stretch where you score four runs, 0-0-2. So are they back? No, but I'll say this, Vanya, they have their feet underneath them, finally. And two reasons. One, Marquez and Freeland and Gray, give him credit. Those three are pitching well, and you get McMahon and Dahl back. Now your lineup has length again. I mean, their lineup, I mean, being polite, after the 5-hole for 2 weeks was just a series of outs. A series of outs. Just 0-for-0-for-0-for-0-for. And, I mean, it was like they were hitting 203, Cecil, through like the first 15 games. That's the equivalent of batting a pitcher in 9 spots. So now you get Dahl back and you get McMahon back. And McMahon, 3-for-4 last night, 2 home runs, career-high 5 RBIs. And he lengthens your lineup out, and he's lefty. So it balances the lineup. And Dahl, we all agree, Dahl is a premier talent. His issue is simple. Health. He can't stay on the field. But you saw what they get exposed when they don't have depth to cover that. With Fuentes and Valake, I mean, that's not it. If McMahon's there, Cecil, then Hampson's a utility player. Now you're like, okay, I like this. Now Hampson is a utility player. Okay, that's a nice role for him. McMahon giving me some thump from second. Okay, and now when Murphy joins in, the key is, and thank you for the text, the key is GMs evaluate their team to kind of decide where they are between May 15th and Memorial Day. Like, who are we after 45, 50 games? What do we need to fix? Is that internal through promotion of the minors, or is that we got to make a couple trades?
Mm-hmm.
Get Daniel Murphy back 1st of May or so. By Memorial Day, you're going to know, hey, do they have a chance, or are they, you know what, they're short this year. But you've got to, when Murphy comes back, you need to be within 2 to 3 games of 500.
Okay.
You can't be 7 or 8 climbing that mountain all year. It's just too hard.
Well, I'll piggyback. It was Vanya on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Again, Vanya, thank you for your question. I'll piggyback off her question on the unrealistic expectations. Because, you know, Pedro Gomez, who I definitely appreciate and adore his baseball insight.
Good dude.
Really one of the
dude.
Best out there. He's on these airwaves saying, you know, I got the Rockies in the World Series. Like, we're all saying that. You know, like, hey, it's part of the conversation. When we were out there at the home opener, all of us were at Blake Street Tavern. Like, we were talking about Rockies, World Series, same sentence, not even batting an eyebrow. batting an eyelash.
That was a mistake by you, but go on. Continue.
Just keep plugging away.
You keep trying hard. Someday.
Someday you'll get it right. The eyelashes were batted. Were those unrealistic expectations?
Yes, they were.
You can say that in the end of April. You can say that with certainty.
Well, I was saying before the season, they weren't a World Series team for me. Because when Pedro said it, and I've known Pedro since, 96, I mean, at least almost 20 years plus. Great. When he said it on air when I was hosting, he said, I haven't gone to the World Series. And I'm like, do you know Brian Shaw's still on the team? Do you know Jake McGee's still on the team? Like, their bullpen was their biggest question. It's not even a question now because they couldn't get to their bullpen. So I don't know that the bullpen's not a question. They were trailing in every game. They didn't have a lead for 57 innings. So we don't even know if their bullpen's any good. That was my biggest concern going in. And then they got just struck by, injuries that were crazy. When you lose Dahl, McMahon, and Murphy, other than the Yankees, Red Sox this year, there's not many teams that can withstand losing middle-of-the-order bats. And they did, and they were terrible. And their lack of depth got exposed. But I didn't see them as a World Series team because the Dodgers are better than them on paper, and the Dodgers are not the same on August 1st. Everyone looks at the Dodgers and say, well, the Rockies match up well. They do. Well, now Kershaw's back. And he looks pretty good again. Even if he's throwing 88 to 91, he's going to figure it out. And they're not going to be the same team on August 1st. They're going to add one or two relievers and probably a bat. And the Rockies, for me, they're just a little short. Doesn't mean I see them as a playoff team. But man, with the freaking Brewers aren't going away. The Cardinals are, it's not going to be easy. And they've got to dominate at home. Last night was their first home win of the season.
Repeat that again.
They're 1-5 at home. Like, that can't happen. And that was the problem last year, Cecil. If you remember, the reason they were mired in mediocrity last year is because they were terrible at home. And then they got crazy hot down the stretch. The last 2 months of the season, best home team in baseball. Well, they've got to be steady. You got to be thinking in terms of, if possible, 50 home wins. But 48 to 52 home wins. And then you win 41 on the road, as they've done, which they've improved dramatically. Now you're right there. You're right there in that 89 to 92 win. I don't see him over that. I saw him before the season, frankly, as an 85 win team because I had serious concerns about their bullpen. Serious concerns. And I'm not sure those are resolved yet. I hope I'm wrong. I want him to be in the playoffs. It's a better story. 3 straight years in the playoffs. You got Arenado signed. You're going to try to sign Story long term at some point. Hey, Freeland. You got Marquez. But again, I don't see him as a World Series team. Not right now. Prove me wrong. That's all. Prove me wrong. I don't see that right now.
It's Question Troy. We're taking your questions on the Ramoslaw.com text line. It's 303-713-1043. Use the hashtag Question Troy. That's 303-713-1043. A hockey fan is, they're fired up, man.
And they should be.
Yeah, Pogo chimes in. He's like, you guys aren't even talking about the best team in Colorado. What about those ads?
I was going to say DU Gymnastics. DU and Gymnastics are going this weekend. Good luck to the girls, to the Pioneers. They're having a great season. Yes, the Avs. They are a blast to watch. I'll give a shout out to Mark Mosier on the calls. He's been fantastic.
Oh, Mosier's the man.
His enthusiasm matches the moment. But when they get, dude, where's McCarr? Cale McCarr shows up. And he's just scoring goals. He's like walking out of the freaking bookstore at UMass scoring goals. Like no other sport does that happen where a guy would walk into a playoff series it's straight from college. But you watch them. What changed for me, and I watch them, I'll be completely transparent. I watch them way more when I'm anchoring sports, like the day before sports or a couple days before.
Right.
Because they're in my sportscast, and I'll be anchoring tonight and Saturday. But the playoffs are different. But I watch them really differently leading up to my sportscast. The difference for me, and Pogo would know, getting Rantanen healthy and Landeskog healthy, and they were already playing well. So you got two of your better players and one in your captain in Landy come in, and that's like a shot of Red Bull. Now you throw this kid in, and I was in their locker room the other day, and there's not jealousy toward the kid. It's too much attention, but the kid has handled it well. And they all know he can play. Like, we talk about guys like...
Right.
You just know he's that good.
Players know.
Exactly. So they're just kind of like, yeah, the tension's a little annoying, but damn, is this kid good. And they've treated... And so they... It's great. I love the way their clubhouse was like, yeah, it's a little nutso, this 20-year-old. He's getting all this attention, but he can help us win. And that's all they're about. but their effort's been great. They've outplayed the Flames outside of that one power play in game one where they got three goals. The Avs have won the series. If not for Mike Smith, the man with the common name and uncommon game, but not for him, the Avs would be looking at a sweep. I mean, they're throwing like 100-plus shots on goal in back-to-back playoff games. You never hear of that. I mean, they are peppering the guy. It's just like freaking pucks everywhere on this guy, and he's playing out of his mind, or Calgary's not even – they could be getting swept, but I absolutely think the Avs are winning the series. Now, it might not happen tonight. They can clinch tonight in Calgary, but they, for me, I'd be shocked if they don't win this series, and they are dangerous, Cecil. MacGruber, my guy, Grubauer, he's playing well. And that hockey's the one sport. And I covered the Avs 97-98, full seasons of Avs. And that was my first exposure to hockey. And I didn't know what I was watching with how great Patrick Waugh was and Sakic and Forsberg and Foote. I mean, really no idea. Like, these were some of the greatest of all time. And Waugh's case, certainly an argument for the greatest of all time. But hockey's the one sport where one player can control a game. You say, oh, baseball pitching. Or I'll say this, hockey's the one sport where one player can control a series. Like baseball, Bumgarner maybe the World Series a few years ago, but he doesn't pitch every day. You get a hot goalie with a team playing with this kind of intensity, they're dangerous. And they've been the best team on home ice for 2 months, month and a half. They're fun to watch, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they get it. Like that, if the Nuggets, you know what, if I was Mike Malone, I'd be tempted to say, let's watch the third or the overtime period of the Avs to see guys selling out, winning along the boards, throwing their body, you know, just selling out for a common goal, man. If you're the Nuggets, watch the overtime of the Avs the other night, and you tell me which team. When you watch your film defensively, and you watch what the Avs, just the effort. Watch the effort of the Avs. It's been inspiring.
And the intensity. And you mentioned that shot of Red Bull. Got me thinking, it's Tyrone, which is our next question on Question Troy, 303-713-1043. Is Cortland Sutton the year two player that takes the largest step forward in 2019? Because Philip Lindsay, if Philip Lindsay takes a large step, that's like a 2,000-yard season. He's not going to do that. Like, we all love Philip Lindsay, but that's just not going to happen. Royce Freeman, you could make that argument based on his production. He was banged up, whatever, high ankle sprain. But is it really Sutton, even more than Bradley Chubb, who set the bar incredibly high? Like, the largest step from a year two player for the Broncos, to answer Tyrone, it's Tyrone. I can't help myself. Is that the guy that takes the largest step?
Yeah, and he benefits in this conversation and this question, and thank you for it. Is like, if you were grading it, you would give Lindsay like an A-, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would give Chubb like an A-. So, mm-hmm. Like, let's say they got a 91 on the test. How much higher can they go?
Right.
Whereas I would have given Sutton like an 83. So he definitely has room to go up to that, you know, low 90s position because of his athleticism, because of how they're going to use him in this offense. So it's an interesting question. I would still say, for me, it's Chubb. That you're going to see Chubb go from...
Oh, my God, if he takes a large step?
Yes, because he's going to go...
We're talking about 20 sacks.
I'm not talking... I'm talking... You're going to walk away from the season and go, that's clear pro bowler, and year three all-pro.
Could be all-pro this year. That's a guy that wrecks the league if he takes a large step.
But last year he was in coverage 50 times.
Thank you, distracted Joe Woods. It's so nice not to have distracted Joe Woods in front of the defense.
Why is he in coverage? Why? Am I putting a 270-pound man in
makes
coverage?
Makes no sense. By the way, not a Chappelle Show fan?
I like Chappelle.
I did the It's Tyrone, and you didn't even laugh.
I was trying to keep a straight face. I'm more Living Color. Like, that's how dated I am.
Do you know how much talent was on that show?
Fire Marshal Bill.
My God. That was
Jennifer
creepy.
Lopez was one of the fly girls in Living Color.
Yeah.
The Wayans
Fire
Brothers.
Marshal Bill was creepy, though. That was, like, weird. It's, like, over the top.
Yeah, that was a great... That was when I was in college. That was a fantastic show. Chappelle's funny. I just didn't get into Chappelle the same way I got into In Living Color in college.
All right. Well, what makes the most sense for the Denver Broncos in the first round? It might not be what you think. We tell you what it could be next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion. even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
2019 NFL Draft is less than a week away. Imagine it, Troy. Troy Rank, Cecil Lammy sitting in for Schlereth and Evans today. Imagine 1 week from today, Troy. I'm going to be in Nashville, waking up that beautiful Tennessee morning, and we're going to know who the Broncos took in the first round. We're going to know what player this team added as their top pick. So what is best for the Denver Broncos sitting there at number 10? Now, people would say, well, what's best? Devin White falls to 10. It's not going to happen. Sorry.
What's best for 10? Why do you got to kill my dreams? Why you got to be that way?
I'm sorry.
You're a dream crusher. That's what you are.
We can talk reality or we can talk fantasy. If you want to, like, hey, Devin White's at 10. Everybody takes him and then... Yay. Yay, Bronco. Go Broncos.
I can see you being in a cheesy heavy metal band from the 80s, and your single is Dream Crusher.
Dream Crusher. Okay.
I can do it. You would have like that same docking into the fire. Into the fire.
Wearing the pastel and the big hair. Yeah, we need some, like, I know that Stink gets to play Culture Club and all that, but Millennial Band, we need some, like, Wasp or docking or something like that, because you and I are both kind of little metalheads. So that's cool.
We'll transition from cheesy metal into some old school Ride the Lightning Metallica.
Okay.
I'll still listen to Metallica every day, at least once. Either Master of Puppets, Battery,
yeah.
Four Horsemen.
I'm an Anthrax guy. Like, I find myself listening to Anthrax or Testament on a daily basis. So, there you go.
It's a little darker than me, but I can appreciate it. See, there's Metallica.
But you
right
never
there.
Know if it's Hell's Bells or if it's Ride the Lightning. That's what I don't like about that song. When the bells chime, you're like, well, which one is it?
It's Undertaker. That's who it is.
The bell toll. Sorry. Not Ride the Lightning.
I saw that. I'll say this. Undertaker's entry song for WWE. I saw him live with my kids when they were little.
All right.
He's got a Metallica. He had a Metallica vibe to it. Metallica, old school Metallica. I used to listen to. This was like when headphones first. Like you still had like a Walkman. And a fanny pack. I didn't have a fanny pack. Thank God.
But little headphones too. Like the little ones.
I had a mullet in high school 1 year.
We all had mullets.
It was bad.
Come on.
But Metallica, there's never an off season for talking Broncos. There's never a bad day for me listening to Metallica.
Yes, and there's never an off season for talking. I'll be listening to Metallica in Nashville Friday morning.
Dream Crusher, back to your Devin White.
Where
are we at 10, Dream Crusher?
People say, what's best for the Broncos? TJ Hawkinson, he's gone.
No, he's not, but go on.
He's gone.
Where's he going to before 10?
Maybe Buffalo.
At 9?
Maybe Buffalo, yeah. We could see that. But he might be there. Okay, so let's do that. I'm going to start there. Because it's not a guarantee he's gone at 10. It's not a guarantee. It's a guarantee with Devin White.
Yeah, he's going to Tampa Bay at 5 or somebody before 10. He'll be gone before 10. And I agree on that, unfortunately, Drake Crusher.
Yes. I'll take that role. But if Hawkinson is there, is that the best option for Denver? Is that better than trading back? Perhaps getting the Giants' second-round pick, trading back to 17. Is what's best actually, not what's best for the Broncos, but what's best for Joe Flacco? Get him a tight end. Get him TJ Hawkinson.
Tight end at 10, to me, is too rich. It's just too rich.
Because
I can get a guy in the second that I like, and I pick up three guys in my first three picks that start. Whereas if I take Hawkinson at 10... It's right on the bubble. He's right on the... Because the leagues change with Ertz and... help me, I'm losing my mind. Kelsey. Mm-hmm. Like, you could argue if you feel like he's that... Even George Kittle, but he wasn't a first rounder. If you think he's Kittle or you think he's Ertz or you... Then he certainly is worth the 10 pick.
Right.
Problem is, if you miss at tight end at 10, then he's Eric Ebron the first 4 years of his career. And you're like, why did we take a tight end that high? Like... Isn't Ebron the only one that's gone that high in the draft in years? Help me out.
Yeah, it's been a while. The last 3 are Vernon Davis, Kellen Winslow Jr., and Eric Ebron, who was taken
a mixed bag.
In front of Odell Beckham Jr.
Right.
That's which is what he'll always be remembered for.
You'd have to agree, Cecil.
Oh, those are bad picks.
That's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Now, Ebron had a really good year last year.
But has the game changed that much that you would say, you know, that's the old way of thinking. The new way of thinking is dominate the middle of the field.
Right, and that's where it has evolved. But it hasn't evolved enough to where you would have enough value at 10 at tight end where you could get Sternberger or another guy or even Fant. Again, Fant, you believe, would be there at 15 or 17,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So in that scenario, again, you have to have someone that wants to come up and covet a player at 10. This is so easy to say, oh, trade back. Well, you have the only way someone's trading to 10 is because one of those quarterbacks is on the board.
By the way, Jacksonville wants to trade back at 7, and the Lions want to trade back at 8.
Exactly, and that complicates it because they don't need a quarterback, either one of those teams. So they would be prime for a team to trade up.
And teams might be leaping you.
Exactly.
Because they're worried about you, the Denver Broncos, taking a quarterback at 10. And that's where your smokescreen, and I think the quarterback interest is a smokescreen, that's where it could backfire.
But they've had to do it because you got to create the perception you'll take a quarterback.
Right.
But where they could get undermined is if someone trades up to Jacksonville or trades up to 8.
Because they're worried about Denver.
Because they're worried Denver's either going to – I don't even think they're worried that Denver to take a quarterback. I think they're worried that they would trade out and some team will get in front of them.
Right.
I don't think they're worried Denver's going to take a quarterback at 10, personally.
They shouldn't be.
That's my opinion. But if you're Denver and you can trade out of 10 to 17, get Fant, and then you pick up whether it's Reisner at early second round, now you got something. Now I got some starters. Now I got something I can work with. I'll ask you this. You do this for a living. Is Hockenson enough better than Fant that where you would take Hockenson at 10? In my hypothetical scenario here,
yes,
you could get Fant at 15 or 17,
mm-hmm.
or Hockenson at 10. Would you be willing to trade back to take Fant instead of Hockenson at 10?
Yes. I want Hockenson at 10. That's what I'm saying. And here's the clear difference. Hockenson is a devastating blocker. Like, not an effort guy. Like, Sternberger's an effort guy as a blocker, but he's not a good blocker.
Right.
He's a receiver. Fant is an effort guy as a blocker. He's not a good blocker. He's a receiver. Like, you're getting a big receiver if you get Noah Fant or Jay Sternberger. Kaleo Waring, the San Diego State kid DMAC can't stop raving about. Like, that's a big project. You take T.J. Hockenson. It is clear he is the best, and this isn't about safe, because I think it was Daniel Jeremiah who said T.J. Hockenson's the safest player in the draft. I want a damn good player, and that's what T.J. Hockenson is at 10 because he's a great receiving threat. The nuance he has as a route runner. It's funny. I was listening to DMAC, and he said, like, I'd rather have Kyle Waring in the fifth round than T.J. Hockenson at 10. No. And he was saying, like, every time I watch Hockenson, he's wide open. Why is that? Part of it is the college hash. I'll give you that. But part of it is his nuances around. I can't even believe I'm saying it because it never happens. You never see a tight end that's nuanced as a route runner in college. So not only is he a devastating blocker and he's nasty, he's also a nuanced route runner with great hands that can be a threat in the middle of the field. I think if T.J. Hockenson is there at 10, that's what's best for the Denver Broncos.
What about, for argument's sake, Fant with Hireman or Fant with Fumagalli?
Fumagalli looked really small.
Yeah.
I mean, we had our observations from minicamp. Like, Sutton looks like he's in great shape and midseason
DeMarcus
form.
Walker's 290 plus now.
Walker's put on weight,
which may
larger.
Help him. May help him.
No, that's good.
I think it's good for him.
I think it's his only way he makes the team.
Yeah, he's way bigger.
Honestly. But, man, dude, when I saw Troy Fumagalli, I was like, he's still got vacuum hands. Like, he still has great hands. But it's like, my God, is he small. What was the Iowa tight end that they had with Kubiak when he was here that had like the three different names, remember?
Cobble.
Yeah, Krieger-Koble. Henry Krieger-Koble. Right. He's like a law firm of Henry Krieger-Koble. They helped me out. Anyway, he looked like that. And Henry Krieger-Koble, who's like 230-ish, his big knock was like, he's not big enough. When I saw Fumagalli, I mean, is that a concern to you? Because it's like, if you're going to get Fant, your other guy better be a blocker. And Jeff Hireman, I don't really care for his skill set, but he's a decent enough blocker. Like, I can trust him to do that. We all love Jake Butt. We would not even be having this conversation.
He's the X factor. Yeah, he's the absolute X factor.
Jake Butt is everything. Jake Butt had first-round talent. And had he not been hurt, we'd have been talking about him with O.J. Howard. We'd have been talking about him with Evan Engram. But then he got hurt. He shredded his knee at Michigan in the bowl game. So it's like, Jake Butt is that answer. We have to talk about tight end, though, because I don't know if Jake Butt will ever be what we thought it would be. But Fumagalli, his size, concerned or no?
It is a concern. I need to see it at training camp. It's less of a concern in April than it would be in July when I need to see what it looks like. Because we really didn't see him last year, just right. a little glimpse. And then he had the sports hernia, and then he was shut down, and then he disappeared. Remember, he was early on in camp, first week, he was showing out. You're like, okay, they got something here. And then he disappeared with the injury. He got a setback. So it's a little bit of a concern now. I want to see what that looks like in July. Jake Butt is the X factor, but, I mean, in full honesty, they can't trust him to be healthy. Hope is not a strategy. So if you're saying, oh, he's going to be healthy, that's silly. You just don't know that. At this point, you would have to bet the under on that. Like, you can't say he's going to be healthy. He's had 3 ACL surgeries. So you don't know. If he's healthy, then that I want that to be gravy. Like, oh, my God, look at this weapon we had that we didn't know what we were going to have for 4 games. Now we have for whatever it is, 12 games. But Hockenson at 10 for me is just right on that bubble, Cecil, of being a little bit of a push at 10. If I could get another tight end at 17, 15 or 17. The way you describe Hockenson, I know Zach Bye is on that train too, that he's just so unique that you could definitely believe him at 10 and feel good about it. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet at 10. Now, I like the player. I'd like him a lot better at 15 and picking up a second-round pick.
Right. We'll see. What's best for the Broncos? It may be trading back. But is there a player that would give them pause at 10? We'll discuss next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Cecil Lammy and Troy Rank filling in for Schlereth and Evans today on this beautiful Friday. And Troy, there's something that either when I've talked to you or I've heard you on air, you bring up that Dwayne Haskins would give this team pause. Why would the Ohio State quarterback give the Broncos pause at number 10 overall in your eyes?
Well, he's a bigger guy. He's a pocket passer, with all due respect to Stephen A. He's not running around. No, he's a guy who's going to stay in the pocket. He doesn't run well at all, frankly.
No.
Not only is he not a running quarterback, he doesn't run well. No, but that's not a bad thing necessarily.
He's not athletic at all. Like, he's, what was it, the 3rd and 9 against Purdue? Just go watch the Purdue game, everybody. And it's 3rd and 9, design quarterback draw. They part the Red Sea, huge lane. He takes off to run. He gets like a yard.
Yeah, that Purdue game was awful for him. I blame Urban Meyer because they threw like 73 times. Like, he got so stubborn in that game when there's no reason to throw that many times if you're Ohio State in that conference.
But so why would Haskins give them pause?
Because looks the part, fits the part, throw big arm, is a guy that could use a red shirt year, and you like him enough to where you go, Cecil. And again, carry this out. Help me out here. Broaden the view a little bit. You like him enough to where you go, well, Joe Flacco might go 8-8, which we like. We're on the right track, but we don't want to commit to him. And how in the heck are you going to get one of those guys, Tua Fromm, which would be Herbert, Tua Fromm, if you go 8-8 next year? So then you're going to have to trade like the 18th pick, your second round pick, and then the next year's one to get your quarterback?
Kansas City moved up for Pat Mahomes. Well, and they did it by sacrificing a first-round pick. That's fine.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. That's the argument you have to have with yourself and lay it on the board. Do we like Haskins enough at 10? Because we didn't expect him there, but we met with him. We liked him. He did wear the John Elway old-school orange jersey with the snake skin.
I don't see that as a big deal. Do you?
No, Elway liked it. I talked to sources about it. He thought it was funny. He thought it showed a sense of humor. He thought it showed real confidence.
That's why he wore number 7 in college.
Right, and he showed confidence. Like, right. Some guys could say, like, really, like, you're trying to impress the boss. Elway, based on the sources I talked to, like, hey, it showed confidence. It was funny. He thought it was a sense of humor. So it impressed the boss. That's not why they would take him, but that was certainly not a bad thing. That did go over well in Del Valle. But my point is, Cecil, he's there at 10, like Chubb. You didn't expect Chubb there.
No.
At 5, you thought it was going to be Denzel Ward, you were going to trade out. All of a sudden, you're sitting there at 10, and for whatever reason, nobody's traded up with Jacksonville. Nobody's traded up
Detroit.
So at 10, he's sitting there. And then you ask yourself, do we like him enough? That's number one. And they like him. Do they love him? So at 10, you'd have to love him. You and I agree, right?
Yes.
If you take him at 10, you have to love him.
And if they do love him, I'm fine with that. Just love him. But don't like him.
So let's say they love him. And do you love him enough to take the next broadened view of, well, we could be 7-9, 8-8. How the heck are we going to get to our quarterback in this great quarterback draft of Tua, Herbert, Fromm? Like, how are you going to get to one of those guys? You're going to have to trade up to probably, what, top 5? Top 4? I mean, you know, you get what I'm saying here. It's not easy to get. So you're going to sacrifice multiple picks then. So you have to ask yourself, is Haskins at 10 worth more than us going 7-9 and sacrificing huge chunks of the following year's draft?
Let me retort then. Because you mentioned that they'll be drafting at 18 and how they, you know, and then the next year we'll see, maybe it's another one. All due respect to the Sylvester Williams or the Garrett Bowles, like, they'd be trading away something they're not good at. That first round pick that's in the 20-ish range, they're not good at that.
Paxton I'm not worried Lynch about
at
that.
26. I'm worried Garrett Bowles at 20.
I'm worried about the second and the one the next year.
Okay, second is a little bit different story, but like, if I'm different because I'd sell the farm for those guys.
Okay.
I'd sell the farm.
Well, again, if that's your conviction, I'm fine with it. That's what I'm saying. If you say, you know what, I like Haskins. I don't like him at 10. And if we go 8-8 and we realize, you know what, we like Flacco, but it's time to move on. He's showing age.
Mm-hmm.
And your conviction is we're going to sell out, then fine. We're going to sell the farm to get the guy. But don't get there and be half pregnant. We're 8-8. Should we trade? Should we not? Is it Flacco? Is it not? And then you get caught in this gray area. The worst spot to be is gray area in football. You need to be really bad or really good. Being 7-9, 6-10 was okay because it helped you get to the top 10. But 7-9, 8-8, it's like the worst place to be.
How would a redshirt year help Haskins, though, when he's not going to do anything? That's the problem with these NFL practices. And there's no NFL Europe, and there's no AAF, right? There's no developmental league. There's no way for Haskins to get what he needs, which is more reps. There's no way. If you take him and Joe Flacco's the understood quarterback, there is no way for you to develop Haskins or to redshirt him. Like, I get it in terms of time and knowledge. What'd that do for Brock Osweiler, you know? Like, what would it do for Dwayne Haskins to sit behind Flacco for a year and do nothing?
You take him over to that soccer park across the street, play games there, scrimmages, shirts on skins.
Okay.
Now, I get it that the problem is the NFL practices are not structured for the second team guy to get better.
No.
And that's where I know fans aren't out there, so that's the part. Like, they see training camp, everyone getting reps, and it's even, once the season starts, the second team guy, the one guy gets 8 reps, he gets 1 or 2. Like, it's not equal.
Right.
So it is hard to get better, and it's hard to get better without playing. But you have to be ready to play, because if you get your opportunity too soon, like we saw with Paxton, then you're overwhelmed, and sometimes you don't recover. So it's that weird timing thing of you need enough, you know, practice, enough studying of the test to be able to get an A or a B+. If you go in and try to cram and you don't retain it and you get a C-, now doubt creeps in. Doubt from you, doubt from your teammates, doubt from the coaches. So there is a benefit. Like, I'll counter your argument. It didn't hurt Mahomes. Now, he had a great tutor in Alex Smith, and I give Alex Smith a lot of credit for basically saying, here's what I know, here's what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys aren't like that.
I don't think Joe Flacco would do that.
I think he'd be professional, as he was with Jackson, but he's not going to be... Here's all my secrets. Like, Manning never did that.
No.
Manning's like, if you want to follow me around and watch what
I do...
That's
why the whole Trevor thing was always bunk. Or like, he was around Manning for a year. Manning wasn't going to share any secrets.
No, you just watch Peyton, and if you do what he does, you're going to get better just by following his routine. But most starting quarterbacks in the league aren't putting the arm around the guy saying, hey, here's how you get better.
Like, and Alex Smith did.
Alex Smith did. Foles kind of did with Wentz.
A little bit.
But it's very rare, this idea they're all kumbaya and I want you to take my job and here's all my secrets. That these guys are type A personalities, crazy competitive. But, you know, in the case of Haskins, he's a one-year college starter. That's why he, more than most, would benefit for me of a redshirt learning year. Honestly, and this is a bad example, and Bronco fans will get mad, Chad Kelly clearly benefited from it on the field. That redshirt year, he got his body right. He also went,
and you and I saw it, he would go after everything was done because he couldn't practice with the team. He would go through the script. He'd have the day's script. And he would run by himself.
The practice.
He would run the practice, the full practice, as if he was a starter, by himself. So Chad Kelly almost did go to the soccer park.
Right. But
you know,
so
in a way.
Clearly, there were still off-field issues. But on the field, he clearly benefited from a redshirt year.
Right.
Got his body right and learned how to, like, deal with the terminology of the NFL huddle. That's why I'm saying that Haskins, you go 7-9 and you have Haskins in the fold. Again, I wouldn't do this, but you could argue, hey, we're 7-9. Now we've got our kid who's ready to take over, and hope would be real. When you go 7-9, like as the 6-10 with Keenum, then you're like, remember, they're on their fifth starting quarterback, Cecil, since Peyton Manning. Fourth,
it's awful.
Fourth coach, fifth quarterback in the last 4 years. Like, at some point, to be good in the NFL, they have to have stability at both those positions.
I'll wrap it up by this, and I wish we had more time to get into this. I don't know how much longer John Elway will do this. You know, 3 years left this year and two more years. And he doesn't want to leave the Broncos in a lurch. You know what I mean? He doesn't want to miss on a first-round quarterback. And then, you know, he's done in 3 years and, you know, Dwayne Haskins isn't ready to take over or whatever. But that's another part of the conversation. Troy, I had fun today, man. We got to talk about the dirt. We got to talk about Motley Crue, and you brought up Dawkins. Yeah. Were you a Steelheart guy?
I was not a Steelheart guy. Spinal Tap.
Me neither. I was just asking. Anyway, that's a wrap. Hope everyone has a great weekend. Troy, get a little nap in, buddy.
I'm going to get a nap
in.
I'll be
sports tonight.
Anchoring at 6 and 10 on Denver 7, so check that out.
That's Denver 7 in Bronco Insider, Troy Rank. Many thanks to y'all for listening. Many thanks to Millennial Band. I'm Cecil Lammy saying stay tuned and stay frosty.